Thank you for being a valued supporter of the 10X Podcast Group. Your dedication means the world to us. Today, we bring you a gripping tale titled, The Silent Town. Your continued support and subscription fuel our passion for storytelling, and we deeply appreciate every moment you spend with us. So, without further ado, let's dive into today's compelling narrative. The Silent Town. Chapter 1, The Forgotten Tape. The farmhouse stood like a skeleton against the bruised evening sky, windows shattered, its wooden bones rotting under decades of neglect. Time had claimed this place, Mia thought, as she pushed open the creaking front door. Dust particles floated lazily in the dying light, their descent disturbed by her entry. The smell of damp wood and decay was suffocating, but it wasn't the air that made Mia's heart quicken. It was the silence, the kind that crawls under your skin and whispers that you aren't alone. Mia Rowe wasn't supposed to be here. At least, that's what her editor would have said. Stick to fluff pieces, Mia. Leave the crime stories to someone else. But Mia's curiosity had always been louder than her caution. She'd spent months sifting through rumors about the Silent Town, a name locals gave to Clearwater Falls after a string of murders turned its streets into shadows. Nobody talked about it anymore. They acted as though the years had healed the scars, but Mia knew better. She adjusted the strap of her camera bag and ventured deeper into the house, her boots crunching on broken glass. Her flashlight flickered along warped floorboards and sagging walls where faded wallpaper peeled away like dead skin. Upstairs, a gust of wind rattled something, maybe an old window frame or a loose shingle. She froze, listening. Nothing. Mia exhaled and wiped her damp palms on her jeans. Come on, Mia, she whispered to herself. It's just an old house. The tip about the farmhouse had come from a cryptic email she received the night before. No name, no explanation, just find the house on Route 9. Basement. You'll want to see this. At first, she'd assumed it was a prank. Clearwater Falls was full of urban legends, and old crime stories had a way of turning into ghost tales. But something about the email gnawed at her. And so here she was, alone, in the dark. Mia found the door to the basement at the end of a narrow hallway. It was barely attached to its hinges, hanging crooked like a mouth mid-scream. Cold air oozed from the darkness below, and she hesitated. Why did it always have to be a basement? Her flashlight beam shone across the dusty staircase, illuminating cobwebs that glistened like gossamer threads of a trap. She swallowed her fear and descended. Each creaking step felt like an intrusion, her breath hitching with every groan of the house. At the bottom, the basement was colder than she expected. Her flashlight cut through the gloom, revealing an unfinished space with a cracked cement floor. Rusted tools hung on the walls, their shapes distorted like they belonged in a nightmare. And then she saw it, a small wooden crate pushed into the far corner. Mia approached cautiously. The crate was covered in a thick layer of dust, untouched for years. Kneeling beside it, she pried the lid open and found nothing but old, stained blankets. Frustrated, she shifted the contents aside until her fingers grazed something hard and rectangular. A cassette tape. Her pulse quickened as she held it up to the light. It was unmarked, its black plastic casing scratched and brittle. She turned it over in her hands, almost expecting it to hum with the weight of its secrets. Who would leave this here? And why? Please don't be empty, Mia murmured. Her old Walkman was in her bag, a relic she carried specifically for investigating rumors like this. She slid the cassette inside, pressed play, and adjusted her headphones. For a moment, there was nothing but static. Then a voice broke through. Deep, deliberate, and chillingly calm. Are you listening? Mia's heart slammed against her ribcage. The voice on the tape was male, smooth but devoid of warmth, like someone explaining the weather. You should be. Because nobody listened back then, and that's why they died. The hair on the back of Mia's neck stood up. She gripped the Walkman tighter, her breath shallow. This is my confession. You'll want to pay attention to what I'm about to tell you. It's important. The voice paused, and for a second, Mia swore she heard breathing, slow and heavy, like the man was still alive and standing right behind her. She spun around, flashlight beam cutting through the dark. Nothing. I killed them, the voice continued. One by one. And do you want to know the best part? They never even saw it coming. Mia ripped off the headphones, stumbling back. The tape hissed in the silence, like it knew she was afraid. She couldn't move, couldn't breathe. What did I just find? She glanced back at the crate and realized there were more tapes. At least 5 or 6 of them, stacked neatly under the blankets like a secret waiting to be uncovered. Her journalistic instinct screamed to take them, to listen to every word, but something primal warned her that these tapes were dangerous. From above, the sound of a door slamming echoed through the house. Mia's blood ran cold. She whipped around, flashlight shaking. "Hello," she called out, her voice hoarse. Silence. She didn't wait to find out if she was alone. Shoving the tapes into her bag, she scrambled up the basement stairs and out into the night. The farmhouse loomed behind her, its shattered windows staring like dead eyes. As Mia drove away, her hands trembling on the steering wheel, the voice played over and over in her head. "Are you listening?" "Yes." And Mia knew that whoever recorded that tape had been waiting for someone to find it. Someone like her. Chapter 2, Echoes of the Past. Mia Rowe didn't sleep that night. The voice from the tape haunted her in ways she couldn't shake. Low, steady, and dripping with malevolence. Every time she closed her eyes, she heard it again. "Are you listening? I killed them." By morning, her apartment felt claustrophobic. Stacks of notebooks, scattered research papers, and half-empty coffee mugs cluttered the room, chaotic reflection of her mind. The tapes she found sat in a box on her desk, taunting her with their silence. She stared at them, chewing her lip. Mia knew she'd crossed a line. Whatever was on those recordings was dangerous. The voice wasn't just a story or a local legend. It was real, and the confession threatened to tear open a case the town had buried decades ago. "Stick to the fluff pieces, Mia," her editor's voice echoed in her mind. "Not this time." She turned on her laptop and pulled up everything she'd gathered about Clearwater Falls' infamous cold case. Between 1978 and 1981, 7 people were murdered within a 50-mile radius of the town. They were killed differently, some strangled, some stabbed, but the victims shared one chilling connection. They were all prominent members of the community. Teachers, a retired sheriff, the mayor's son. All pillars of trust. The media called it the Silent Town Murders because there were no witnesses, no suspects, and no discernible motive. The killings stopped abruptly after the 7th victim, leaving only rumors in their wake. Mia typed feverishly, adding details to her notes. Victim 1, Grace Keller, librarian. Strangled in her home, January 1978. Victim 2, Harold Wren, schoolteacher. Stabbed in his car, June 1978. Victim 3, Sheriff Tom Wheeler, Rhett, found in the woods, November 1978. Her list went on, each name like a ghost tapping on her shoulder. Mia's fingers hovered over the keys as a sick realization hit her. 7 victims, she whispered, glancing at the tapes. There were 7 recordings. Her phone buzzed, shattering the silence. Mia jumped and snatched it off the desk. "Roe?" "It's Detective Ellis," the voice grumbled on the other end. Ellis was one of the few cops in Clearwater Falls who hadn't written her off with a nuisance. He had a gruff demeanor, but had grown soft toward her persistence. "What's up, Detective?" Mia tried to sound casual, though her pulse quickened. "Don't what's up me. You were seen at the old farmhouse last night." Mia swallowed. "I was following a lead." "A lead? That place has been empty for years. Who tipped you off?" "I don't know." "It was an anonymous email," Mia admitted, pacing her tiny living room. "I found something, Ellis. Something big." He sighed loudly. "What did you find, Mia?" "A tape." She hesitated. "More than one. They're confessions, Ellis. The Silent Town Murders. The killer recorded everything." Silence stretched on the line. "Mia, you need to bring those tapes to the station." "No. Wait, just listen." "I can't yet. I need to." "Noro." His voice sharpened. "You don't understand what you're playing with. If those tapes are real, you're in danger. And if they're not, you're interfering with an open investigation. Do you want to go to jail for obstruction?" Mia closed her eyes, pinching the bridge of her nose. She knew Ellis was right, but something about the tapes gnawed at her. The killer wanted someone to hear their story. The recordings weren't just confessions, they were clues. "Fine," she muttered. "I'll bring them in." "You'd better." Ellis hung up. Mia's car hummed down Route 9 as rain streaked her windshield. The tapes sat in the passenger seat, secured in the box she'd found them in. Outside, Clearwater Falls looked even gloomier than usual. The town was nestled between dense forests and winding rivers, the kind of place that fell forgotten by the rest of the world. She pulled into the parking lot of the Clearwater Police Department and cut the engine. For a moment, she sat there, gripping the steering wheel. She knew what would happen next. The cops would take the tapes, lock them away as evidence, and she'd never hear about them again. Her journalistic instinct screamed to fight back. Listen to them first. Find the truth. But Ellis was right. If she didn't cooperate, she'd lose any chance of covering the story. With a sigh, Mia grabbed the box and headed inside. Detective Ellis was waiting for her in a cramped office on the second floor. He was a middle-aged man with thinning hair and tired eyes, wearing a rumpled suit that had seen better days. He gestured for Mia to sit. "Let me some," he said. Mia set the box on the table and opened it. Ellis frowned as he pulled out the first cassette, turning it over in his hands. "Where did you say you found these?" "Farmhouse on Route 9. "I got a tip." "And you listened to them?" "Just one," Mia admitted. "It's a confession, Ellis. He says he killed them." Ellis slid the tape into an old player on the desk. The room filled with static, and then the voice came through, low, deliberate, unmistakable. "Are you listening?" Ellis' expression darkened. He leaned closer, hands balled into fists. "This is my confession." The voice continued, and Mia watched as Ellis' face went pale. She'd never seen him look scared before. "That's enough," he snapped, stopping the tape. "What? Why?" Ellis stared at her, his jaw tight. "You don't know what you've found, Ro." "Then tell me." He hesitated, glancing at the door as though someone might be listening. "The murders, we thought they stopped in 1981. But what if they didn't?" Mia's blood ran cold. "What do you mean?" "Some people say the killer just got smarter. Moved on. Changed their pattern. But the voice, Ellis, it's him. You know it is." Ellis ran a hand through his hair, clearly torn. "Mia, you need to let this go." She shook her head. "No. This town deserves to know the truth." Ellis sighed. "Truth can get you killed." That night, Mia sat at her desk, staring at the remaining tapes. Ellis had confiscated the first one but let her go, for now. She picked up the second tape, her fingers trembling. Sliding it into her Walkman, she pressed play. Static. Then the voice. "This one was special," the killer said, almost fondly. "She knew me. Trusted me. And that's why she died." Mia's stomach dropped. She grabbed her notebook and flipped through the names of the victims. The second tape was about Harold Wren, the schoolteacher. And suddenly, Mia understood what the killer meant when he said they never saw it coming. Chapter 3. The Mask of Innocence. Mia Rowe couldn't shake the weight of what she'd heard. The voice from the second tape echoed in her mind like a relentless drumbeat. "She knew me. Trusted me. And that's why she died." The schoolteacher, Harold Wren, had been described as a kind, gentle man. The sort of person who volunteered at church picnics and tutored struggling kids after school. The killer's words gnawed at Mia, an insidious implication lurking beneath them. Whoever recorded the confession hadn't just been close to the victims. They were trusted by the entire town. Mia sat cross-legged on her couch. The other tapes splayed out before her. Rain battered the windows, a constant patter against the silence of her apartment. She wanted to listen to all of them, to plunge deeper into the killer's twisted world, but fear held her back. She already felt as though something dark had crept inside her, taking root with every word she'd heard. A soft knock at the door shattered her focus. Mia jumped, her heart leaping to her throat. She glanced at the clock. 10:45 p.m. Who the hell will be visiting her this late? For a moment, she sat frozen, every terrible scenario flashing through her mind. The knock came again, louder this time. "Mia? It's me." Relief washed over her. It was Detective Ellis. She grabbed the tapes and shoved them into her bag before opening the door. Ellis stood there, looking soaked and haggard, his trench coat dripping water onto her welcome mat. "You're a hard woman to track down," he muttered, stepping inside. "You could have called," Mia replied, shutting the door behind him. "I did. 4 times. He shook the rain from his coat and looked her in the eyes, his expression serious. "We need to talk." Ellis sat at the small dining table, a mug of coffee between his hands. His face looked older than Mia remembered, the shadows beneath his eyes deeper. She knew something was wrong before he even spoke. I pulled a file on Harold Wren today, he said finally, voice low. There was something in his report we missed back then, something nobody thought to question. What is it? Mia leaned forward. Ellis hesitated, choosing his words carefully. The night Harold died, he'd been seen with someone. A man, mid-30s, driving an old blue pickup. Witnesses said Harold looked comfortable with him. Like they were friends. Did they ever identify the man? No. The description was vague, and back then, small-town police work wasn't exactly state-of-the-art. But here's the kicker, Mia. 2 weeks before Harold's murder, he reported that same blue pickup circling his house at odd hours. Said it made him nervous. Wait. He reported it, and no one did anything. Ellis nodded grimly. Small town. They wrote it off as paranoia. Thought Harold was overreacting. He ran a hand through his hair. But now, listening to that tape, I think the killer was stalking him. Mia felt a chill crawl down her spine. The idea of the killer watching, waiting, and earning Harold's trust before striking turned her stomach. You're saying this person didn't just know the victims. They planned this for weeks, maybe months. Ella's silence was answer enough. Mia stared into her coffee, her mind racing. What about the truck? Did you find anything on it? No records. Nothing. I'm telling you, whoever this guy was, he knew how to disappear. But I'll keep digging. Ellis met her gaze, his eyes hard. In the meantime, Mia, you need to stop. I mean it. Turn those tapes over, and let the police handle it. Mia shook her head. You're missing something, Ellis. Whoever sent me that email, whoever left those tapes, wanted them found. Why now? After all these years. That's exactly what I'm afraid of, Ellis muttered. What if he's still out there? Mia couldn't sleep after Ellis left. The idea that the killer could still be alive, and possibly still in Clearwater Falls, left her feeling exposed. Her small apartment, with its thin walls and creaking pipes, felt suddenly too vulnerable. Every sound made her flinch. By 2 a.m., exhaustion finally won. She drifted into a restless sleep on the couch, surrounded by notebooks and scattered tapes. She woke hours later to the sound of her phone buzzing. Sunlight filtered through the curtains, weak and gray. Disoriented, Mia fumbled for the phone. The screen read, private number. Her pulse quickened. Hello. Silence. Hello, she said again, her voice sharper. A soft, deliberate breath echoed through the line. And then, are you listening? Mia froze, her blood turning to ice. It was the voice, the same voice from the tapes. Calm. Measured. I hope you are, the voice continued. Because you're closer than you think. The line went dead. Mia dropped the phone like it had burned her, staring at it with wide eyes. The killer knew. He knew she had the tapes. Her mind raced. How did he get my number? She bolted up and checked the locks on her door and windows, double and triple checking them. The apartment felt suffocating, like the walls were closing in on her. She grabbed her bag, stuffed the remaining tapes inside, and yanked on her coat. She needed answers. And there was only one place she could think to start. The Clearwater Falls Public Library was one of the oldest buildings in town, a towering stone structure with dust-covered archives that no one bothered to explore anymore. Mia pushed open the heavy oak doors and stepped inside, her bag slung tightly over her shoulder. The smell of old paper and mildew hit her as she made her way to the basement archive. "Anything specific you're looking for?" the librarian called from behind her desk. "No," Mia replied, forcing a smile. Just doing some research. The basement was colder than she remembered, the dim lights flickering as though protesting her presence. Rows of filing cabinets stretched out like an endless maze, filled with decades of forgotten records. Mia found the cabinet labeled 1978 to 1981 and pulled open the heavy drawer. She thumbed through the files until she found what she was looking for, reports on the original victims. Her fingers stopped on Harold Wren's file. She skimmed the contents, but something caught her attention near the bottom. A photograph, one that hadn't been digitized. It was a grainy image of Harold Wren standing with another man. The photo was old and stained, but Mia recognized something chillingly familiar, the outline of a blue pickup truck in the background. The man's face was partially obscured, but his posture and frame sent a jolt of recognition through Mia. She'd seen that silhouette before, recently. Her breath hitched as the pieces clicked into place. You're closer than you think. Mia turned the photograph over, her hands trembling. There, scrawled in faded ink, what a name. Richard Hill. Mia's heart raced as she whispered the name aloud, feeling as though she'd just pulled back the mask of a monster. Chapter 4 Voices in the Dark. Mia Rowe gripped the photograph so tightly her fingers trembled. Richard Hill. The name echoed in her mind like a gunshot. It didn't ring any bells at first, but instinct told her this was the missing link she'd been chasing. The man in the photo, the shadowy figure beside Harold Wren, was connected to the murders. Maybe even the killer. Her mind reeled. Why wasn't this name ever mentioned before? Why hadn't the police investigated him? She flipped through Harold Wren's file again, scanning for clues. A hastily scribbled note at the bottom caught her eye. Richard Hale, former handyman, worked at Keller Library, Wheeler Farm, and the Wren residence. Fired in 77 for misconduct. Misconduct. The word throbbed in her head. Fired just before the killings began. That wasn't a coincidence. Mia shoved the photo into her bag and slammed the cabinet drawer shut. Dust billowed into the air, but she barely noticed. She had to find out more about Richard Hale. If he was the killer, this was the closest anyone had come to unmasking him in decades. As she hurried up the stairs, she froze. The sound of footsteps echoed from somewhere above, slow, deliberate, like someone pacing. Mia glanced around the basement, her breath shallow. Hello, she called out. Silence. She crept toward the staircase, listening. The librarian had been at her desk when Mia arrived, but now the building was silent. Too silent. With each step up the creaking stairs, Mia's pulse pounded harder. When she reached the main floor, she found the room empty. The librarian was gone. Her eyes darted to the front door. It was ajar, swinging gently in the breeze. Someone had been here. Someone had been watching. Mia sat in her car, the photograph of Richard Hale in her lap. The silence outside was oppressive, the library looming like a stone fortress behind her. She locked the doors and picked up her phone, dialing Detective Ellis. The line rang twice before he answered. Ellis. Ellis, it's me. I found something. You need to hear this. What is it, Ro? He sounded irritated, but there was tension in his voice too. Richard Hale, does the name mean anything to you? Silence. Ellis. I heard you. He let out a slow breath. Where'd you find that name? In Harold Wren's file, Mia replied quickly. There's a photo of Hale standing with him. He worked for the Wren family, the Keller Library, and Wheeler Farm before the murders started. Then he got fired in 77. This guy was around every victim, Ellis. How did no one put this together? There was a long pause on the line. Mia, listen to me carefully. Where are you right now? Outside the library. Why? You need to leave. Right now. Why? She repeated, her voice rising. Because Richard Hale is dead, Ellis said quietly. He died in a fire 30 years ago. Mia froze, staring at the photograph as though it might burst into flames in her hand. That's not possible. Someone's been watching me, Ellis. Someone who knew about the tapes. I don't care what you think you know. Get somewhere safe. I'll meet you. The line went dead. Mia drove on autopilot, Ellis' words bouncing around in her head. Richard Hale is dead. But if that was true, who was on the tapes? Who had called her? Her thoughts were a storm of fear and confusion as she pulled into the parking lot of a diner on the edge of town. The place was nearly empty, bathed in the orange glow of flickering neon lights. It felt safer here, public at least. She slid into a booth and spread the tapes out on the table. One by one, she stared at the unmarked cassettes, each one holding a new confession. New horrors. Her fingers hovered over the third tape. She hadn't listened to it yet, but every instinct told her she had to. She had to understand who this killer was. Why they did it. Who they were. Mia pulled out her Walkman, snapped the third tape, and pressed play. The voice crackled to life. You're still listening. Good. Mia's breath hitched. It felt like the voice was speaking directly to her. This one was messy. They fought harder than the others. I didn't expect that. It took me longer. And when it was over, I stayed for a while. I needed to think. The voice paused, as if reliving the memory. Mia's skin crawled. They were starting to notice me. You know, the town. Whispers in church, looks in the grocery store. But I was careful. I knew how to hide. People trust a familiar face. Mia's stomach turned. The killer was local, someone the town trusted, just like she'd suspected. Here's the thing about secrets, the voice continued. They rot, just like bodies. And everyone in this town had something to hide. The tape hissed with static before cutting off. Mia stared at the Walkman, her heart racing. A shadow moved across the diner's window. She flinched, her hand flying to the strap of her bag. Outside, the figure paused, tall, unmoving, silhouetted against the neon light. It was impossible to see their face, but Mia's instinct screamed danger. The door jingled as the figure entered. Heavy boots thudded against the tile floor. Mia kept her head down, pretending to read the menu, but her pulse pounded in her ears. The man sat in the booth across from her. "Miss Rowe," he said softly. Mia's head snapped up. The man was older, his face weathered and shadowed under the brim of a hat. He had pale, cold eyes that seemed to look right through her. "Who are you?" she demanded, clutching the bag tighter. "I hear you've been asking questions," he said calmly, ignoring her. "Digging where you shouldn't. Are you Richard Hale?" Mia's voice cracked. The man smiled faintly. "You already know the answer to that." Mia's blood ran cold. "You shouldn't have found those tapes," he continued. "Some stories are better left buried." "What do you want?" she whispered. He leaned forward, his pale eyes locking onto hers. "To warn you, Miss Rowe. If you keep looking for ghosts, don't be surprised when they find you." Mia's throat went dry. "Is that a threat?" The man didn't answer. He slid out of the booth, his boots echoing against the floor. Before he left, he paused and looked back at her. "You're closer than you think." The bell jingled, and he was gone. Mia sat frozen, the weight of his words settling over her like a shroud. The photograph, the tapes, the phone call. She wasn't chasing a ghost. She was being hunted by something much worse. Chapter 5, The Final Confession. The doorbell to Mia's apartment buzzed 3 times in quick succession. Each burst of sound was like a knife in her chest. She hadn't slept since the encounter at the diner. The man, the ghost of Richard Hale, haunted her every thought. Mia crept to the peephole, her breath shallow. Outside, Detective Ellis stood, his face haggard and grim. Relief flooded through her, but it was fragile. She unlatched the chain and opened the door. "You look like hell," Ellis muttered, stepping inside. "So, do you owe me a shot back?" She shut the door and leaned against it, crossing her arms. "What's going on, Ellis? Who was that man at the diner?" "You said Richard Hale was dead." Ellis sat at the table, his shoulders slumped. "Because he is Mia. Or he was." Mia's eyes narrowed. "Start making sense." Ellis took a deep breath, as if he was preparing to say something that had been buried inside him for years. "Richard Hale died in a fire in 1982. The fire consumed his cabin out in the woods. We assumed it was accidental, faulty wiring, maybe. But the body we found," he trailed off, his voice faltering. "What?" Mia demanded. Ellis looked at her, his face pale. "It was too burned to identify. We called it Richard Hale, because it was his property. But there was no proof. And no one ever questioned it, because the murders stopped." Mia's heart pounded in her chest. "You're telling me Richard Hale faked his death?" Ellis shook his head. "I'm telling you it's possible. And if it's true, then the man you met last night," Mia finished the thought for him, "is the killer." The silence that followed felt suffocating. Mia's eyes drifted toward her bag, where the remaining tape sat, waiting. "He's watching me, Ellis," she whispered. "He knows I have the tapes. He called me. He sat across from me like it was nothing. Like he knew he was untouchable." Ellis stood and ran a hand through his hair, his frustration evident. "We need to listen to the last tape. If he left something, anything that gives us a real name or location, we can stop him." Mia hesitated. Her fingers hovered over the tapes as she pulled out the final one, the last piece of the puzzle. It was lighter than the others, as though its weight was made of something intangible. "You sure you're ready for this?" Ellis asked quietly. Mia swallowed and nodded. "I don't think we have a choice." She slid the tape into her player and pressed play. Static filled the room. Then the voice, smooth, deliberate, and haunting, rose out of the noise like a phantom. "Are you listening?" "Good. I always knew someone would find these eventually." You've done well to make it this far, but you're running out of time. Mia glanced at Ellis, her hand shaking. By now you've pieced together who I am. Or at least who I used to be. The voice paused, almost as if it were smiling. You think you're so close. But the truth is, you're not chasing a killer. You're chasing a town's guilt, its silence. Mia furrowed her brow. What is he talking about? The voice continued. Every one of them deserved it. Grace Keller, Harold Wren, Sheriff Wheeler. They were liars. Hypocrites. Pillars of rot holding up a broken town. No one else would do what needed to be done. So I did. Mia felt a sick dread in her stomach. The killer wasn't just confessing. He was justifying. But the fire was the real masterpiece, the voice said, growing darker. It wasn't an accident. It was my escape. The body they found wasn't mine. It was someone I chose. Someone who wouldn't be missed. Mia's blood froze. Ellis' expression mirrored hers, a mix of disbelief and horror. Their deaths were my rebirth. And for years, I watched from the shadows as this town pretended to move on. Pretended to forget. The voice lowered, chillingly intimate. But you haven't forgotten, have you, Mia? The room spun. Mia ripped off her headphones, her heart pounding in her ears. How does he know my name? She gasped. Ellis grabbed the recorder, rewinding the tape. Did you hear that? It's Hero. He's talking to you. The tape hissed, and the voice returned, softer now, almost whispering. You're closer than you think, Mia. I've been waiting for you. Come find me, and I'll tell you the rest. Static swallowed the final words. Ellis slammed the table. He's toying with Hero. This ends now. I'm putting you under police protection until we find this bastard. No, Mia shot back, standing abruptly. He wants me to find him. I need to end this. Mia, you're not a cop. Ellis shouted. You don't know what you're dealing with. I know he's been hiding for decades, Mia fired back, her voice trembling. And I know he left those tapes for me. I can't walk away now, Ellis. Not when I'm this close. Ellis sighed, rubbing his temples. Then I'm coming with you. You're not doing this alone. Mia met his gaze, her resolve hardening. Then we start where it all began. The fire. The farmhouse. He's leading us back there. The farmhouse on Route 9 looked even worse in the daylight. Weathered, broken, a monument to the town's forgotten past. Ellis parked his car a few yards away, his hand resting on his holstered gun. You sure about this? He asked. Mia nodded, gripping her flashlight. Let's end this. They stepped inside, the floor groaning under their weight. The air was damp and heavy, filled with the scent of rot and mildew. Mia led the way to the basement door. Watch your step, Ellis muttered, drawing his gun. They descended into the darkness, Mia's flashlight cutting through the gloom. The basement looked the same as before. Empty crates, broken tools, shadows stretching across the walls. But something was different. A faint light flickered in the far corner. Ellis froze. Do you see that? Mia nodded, her throat dry. She moved toward the light, her steps cautious. A small lantern sat on the floor, its glow casting long, distorted shadows. Beside it, something gleamed. A cassette recorder. Mia knelt down, her heart in her throat. A single tape was inside, labeled in shaky handwriting. The Last Confession. Her hands trembled as she pressed play. The voice crackled to life one final time. Welcome home, Mia. A sound echoed behind them, a slow creak of footsteps on the stairs. Mia whipped around, her flashlight beam cutting through the dark. A figure stood at the top of the stairs, watching them. The man from the diner. Richard Hale, or whatever ghost he had become, smiled faintly, his pale eyes gleaming. I told you, he said softly. Some stories are better left buried. Ellis raised his gun, his voice steady. Stay where you are. But the man didn't move. His smile widened as he stepped back into the darkness, his voice lingering in the basement like smoke. Goodbye, Mia. And then he was gone. When the police combed the farmhouse hours later, they found no trace of the man, no footprints, no evidence. No sign that anyone had been there at all. But they found the tapes. 7 confessions. 7 murders. And a town that would never forget the truth again. Mia stared at the farmhouse one last time, its broken windows like hollow eyes. The killer's words echoed in her mind. You're closer than you think. She had found the truth. But some stories never really end.